Welcome back to Issues, Etc. All right, the next 40 minutes of the program are for you political junkies. All of us, to a certain degree, are political junkies. Some of us only during the real hot and heated presidential elections like this one. But it pays in the United States to pay attention to what's going on in politics. We're going to be talking about the 2008 presidential election with, what, only about 75 days away from that very moment. Dr. Jeff Walls joins us, and you can join us as well. 1-877-623-MY-IE. The field is wide open, not in terms of the candidates, but in terms of your questions or your comments. 1-877-623-MY-IE, or email us right here in the studio. It's Thursday, August the 21st. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. Jeff Walls is Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's co-author of the book, Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. Dr. Walls, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be back.
Well, the perennial question is, if the election were held today, who would win?
Well, if the election were held today, it looks like Obama would win. Things are, as we know, tightening up. The overall polls suggest a tightening among national voters, 3 points, perhaps 2 points, 4 points, depends on what poll you look at. There's an interesting site as well, which I've always found fairly helpful, the Rasmussen Report site, and it does a nice job of looking at the election through the Electoral College, which, of course, in our system, it matters what states you win. And at this point, according to the latest polls, and what Rasmussen does is it compiles state-by-state polling data from all the different polls that are done on the states. And at this point, at least, Rasmussen has Obama leading. When you include states that are leaning either Republican or Democratic, 273 to 227, with three states, Nevada, Ohio, and Virginia, as toss-up states. And to win the election, one needs 270 electoral votes out of the 538 cast.
What did you think about Saturday's event out in California at Rick Warren's church, the Saddleback Civil Forum on the presidency and McCain and Obama's performances there?
Yeah, I thought, Todd, it was a wonderful event. I actually liked the way that the candidates did not sit down together, but simply went in order, Obama, then McCain. And I thought Rick Warren of Saddleback did just really a wonderful job. A fair job of asking essentially the same questions of each candidate. I think Warren would be one that we'd certainly like to see on the debate circuit again at some point. And I think a larger issue too is the role of churches and the role of religion in really being a place for people to hear about the candidates and to hear about the issues involved. There's been I don't want to call them scare tactics, but there have been some churches which have been afraid to even, bring up the election because, well, maybe the IRS is looking over our shoulder. Maybe this will affect our financial bottom line. But churches are, I just think, a vital place where, as long as you don't endorse one candidate or another, as long as you talk about the issues, as Warren did, bringing both candidates in, I think forums like that are just ideal because there are so many issues, certainly, that look at religion. I thought each candidate had his strengths. It seemed that McCain had answers that were a little more on focus, a little more tight answers, whereas Obama seemed to be a little more perhaps reflective and talked around a few issues instead of kind of going right at them. So I guess it depends what you're looking for in a debate. But certainly McCain, who is not known for talking the language of religion, so to speak, I don't think McCain hurt himself at all. And in fact, some of his statements, for example, on the life issue, that life begins at conception, I thought those kind of statements would help him with some of the religious kind of right members who might want to look at voting for him.
You mentioned the Rasmussen site. It's also one of my favorites as well. I think it's just good raw data for people who are willing to wade through it. You mentioned tracking this in terms of the Electoral College. And all of us need this every year, unless we're political science people like you, a primer on the line between my vote down at the Civic Center in Waterloo, Illinois, and a man actually getting elected president. Somehow it passes through the Electoral College. Can you instruct us again on how that works?
I'll try. Yes. Each state has a number of electoral delegates equal to the number of House members plus two senators for each state. And you take that number plus the District of Columbia, which does not receive any formal voting representation in the House or Senate. The District of Columbia receives three electoral votes. And in all states except Maine and Nebraska, the winner of the popular vote in the state essentially wins all of those electoral delegates. So, for example, here in Wisconsin, we have eight House seats, and we have two senators like every state. So we have 10 electoral votes. And although George Bush, fared pretty well in the state in 2000 and 2004, he lost the vote here both years to Gore and then to Kerry, and therefore George Bush received no electoral votes from Wisconsin. Gore got all of them in 2000, Kerry in 2004. So the thing the candidates want to do is to try to add up states that will reach that magic number then of 270. Maine and Nebraska, slightly different. They use a different formula that awards electoral votes based upon the congressional districts. So each district is a separate electoral vote. Whoever wins the vote in that electoral congressional district gets that delegate, and then the popular vote winner of Maine and Nebraska each get the two electoral votes. So that's a little more complex. But, yeah, the bottom line is you want to win states. You want to get to 270. And the interesting thing about Rasmussen, too, here, and you said it's a very good site, it codes the states for this year based upon who won the state in 2004. So, for example, it codes, as we do now, the Obama states blue, the McCain or Democratic states, and the McCain states is red. So if you look at this kind of map here, you'll see that among the states that Kerry won in 2004, Obama at this point is leading in all of those states. And in fact, he's also leading in a few other states that Bush won in 2004. So this, you know, this does indicate that unlike 2004, at this point at least, this is Obama's election to lose. And again, the key is to get to those 270 electoral votes.
Okay, we've got about a minute and a half here before the break. If you were advising both campaigns, Obama's and McCain's, who would you recommend to each of these men as their VP picks?
And we should hear that soon. I think with Obama, he's got a couple of different things going on. He's an agent of change, but as we also know, he's inexperienced and he's certainly relatively young when it comes to presidential contending ages. One candidate that might be a possibility is a Joe Biden, a senator who is got some gravitas on foreign affairs. So that'd be one possibility. However, I guess I would suggest Evan Bayh, a senator from Indiana, someone who does have more experience in the political realm, someone who might be able to swing Indiana his way, although that's certainly questionable. So I think Evan Bayh might be one choice there. When it comes to McCain, his issue, age, in some people's mind at least, if you get someone who's too young, too exuberant, that might in some ways exacerbate that, that challenge for McCain. He certainly has experience in the political realm. Somebody like a Tim Pawlenty is an interesting choice. Pawlenty, the Republican governor of Minnesota. Minnesota, one of the states that tends to swing either way, although it's, of course, been more Democratic. The convention's coming up in St. Paul for the Republicans. So Pawlenty might be a good choice, someone who's a little younger, someone who could kind of balance the ticket geographically, and someone who could bring Minnesota back to McCain. again, it's hard to say. There are 4, 5, 6 good candidates on each side.
Are you pretty sure, we've only got about 30 seconds before our break, are you pretty sure that that Obama being pro-choice will choose a pro-choice running mate, and that McCain, conversely being pro-life, will choose a pro-life VP?
Good question. Not necessarily. I'm thinking of a Tom Ridge, former Homeland Security Director for McCain, who does tend to be more pro-choice. He's been mentioned as McCain's running mate, possibly. He's from Pennsylvania, and that's, of course, a key swing state. And again, you have Tim Kaine from Virginia, governor of Virginia, who is more pro-life and who does speak, you know, the language of religion effectively, and does have a faith, to some extent, a faith-based kind of policy program. So those would be two people who these candidates could pick, who would not line up with them on the abortion issue.
Dr. Jeff Walls is our guest. He's Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the 2008 presidential election, headed into that election this Thursday, August the 21st. Feel free to join us with questions or comments. Any questions or any comments you may have, 1-877-623-MYIE or talkback@issuesetc.org. When we come back, we're going to talk about the party conventions.
Radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Zion Lutheran, Greenfield, Wisconsin. Pilgrim Lutheran, West Bend, Wisconsin. Messiah Lutheran, Lebanon, Illinois. Zion Lutheran, Accident, Maryland. Redeemer Lutheran, Jackson, Wyoming. Messiah Lutheran, Marysville, Washington. Trinity Lutheran, Millstadt, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Houston, Texas. St. Matthew's Lutheran, Bon Terre, Missouri. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Lincoln, Nebraska. Hope Lutheran, St. Louis, Missouri. Trinity Lutheran, Austin, Texas. Good Shepherd Lutheran, Collinsville, Illinois. Luther Memorial Chapel, Shorewood, Wisconsin. Christ Lutheran, Oak Park, Illinois. Bethany Lutheran, Naperville, Illinois. Emmanuel Lutheran, Dearborn, Michigan. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click Sponsors. The Issues Etc. 300.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
It wasn't medical technology that saved tiny Emma Young. She was born 25 weeks into her mom's pregnancy, weighing just over a pound. Shortly after her birth, Emma stopped breathing. But it wasn't a multi-million dollar respirator that saved her life. One of the nurses quickly stepped in and started tickling Emma's feet. It stimulated her and she began breathing. This happened repeatedly, and each time her mom or nurses tickled her feet to keep her alive. Emma's just turned one and is normal size for her age. Who would have thought such a basic action could keep a premature baby alive who, according to her mom, had a head the size of a plum? She says Emma's got a great sense of humor, crediting all the tickling they did to keep her alive.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Dr. Jeff Walls is our guest. We're talking about the 2008 presidential election. This email comes from Mike in Florida regarding that Saddleback debate. He says the media keeps saying that both candidates were at ease in the forum, but I'm wondering about the persistent stuttering of Obama. Is the media avoiding his stuttering because it is a physical handicap that he has and it's not politically correct to talk about such things, or is his stuttering a flaw in his ability to speak coherently without notes? And either way, is this desirable for a presidential candidate? Well, Dr. Walls, we've been through about 7 years now, almost 8 years, of a president who does have a hard time speaking, although he doesn't have a stutter. And people have, I guess, on both sides, really gotten tired of it. What do you think?
Yeah, that's. I was actually talking about this with a colleague maybe a week or so ago, and we had been observing, you know, some of the same tendencies. And I guess our sense of it was that Obama is, I think, or at least appears to be reflective and thoughtful, appears to, have a certain eloquence and a certain charisma. And so I think the media, when it comes to his and maybe to his inexact kind of articulation, might give him a pass because of that, because they view him as this articulate, charismatic kind of candidate. And for better or for worse, President Bush was not considered in that same light. And I think there is a bit of a difference, too, whether it's Democratic or Republican being the candidate or being the president. My recollection is with Governor Bush, he was not criticized, certainly to the same extent, with his speaking as he was when he became president. And in fact, in viewing some archival footage, and I think it was pretty representative, President Bush as governor did seem much more fluent, much more articulate, much more thoughtful than certainly some people have given him credit for as president. So I think the media and others create these kind of expectations and these archetypes, and our archetype of Bush is that he is not, a good public speaker, and therefore anything he does to reinforce that is pounced upon, whereas Obama, at least to this point, is perceived to be a charismatic, uplifting kind of orator, and so his pauses and things like that are not as accentuated. But with Obama too, the key here that everyone's been talking about is Obama has not been giving, I think, the American people the substance on his policies that people are looking for, and so maybe when some of those substantive policies come out, which they've been online and those kind of things, but when the candidate talks about them, that might create a different or an altered caricature of what we expect from Obama.
This has nothing to do with the politics of it per se, but I have noticed, having watched now, in half a lifetime, a number of presidents, they all tend, by the time they leave office, to have become caricatures of themselves in their public personas. They do, every single last one of them. They fall into a pattern of behavior, and I don't know why it happens, if they're overhandled or if they're just incredibly busy and tired out, but it happened to Bill Clinton, it happened to President Bush the First, it happened to Reagan. All of them become, I don't want to sound too negative about it, but they kind of become cliched in their own patterns.
Yeah, they do, and I find one interesting thing with this campaign so far, Obama and McCain. It's kind of been, for the most part at least, a kind of reversal of organizational roles when you talk about candidates or presidents being caricatured, because we often think of the Democratic candidates and the Democratic campaign as kind of chaotic. We remember even just recently I wouldn't say it was chaos, but the disarray involving should we seat Michigan, should we not seat Michigan in Florida, and people kind of said, oh, there goes the Democratic Party again, kind of chaotic. But actually, overall, the Obama camp has been fairly disciplined, fairly on focus, on issue. And initially, it seemed to me the McCain camp was more like, I guess, a typical Democratic campaign, and that's McCain. He's a maverick. I think that's true. He kind of was doing his own thing, and then the GOP or McCain or both decided the McCain campaign needed more discipline, brought in some old hands, as it were, from previous campaigns. And I think you've seen the last 2, 3, 4 weeks, the McCain camp being much more disciplined, being much more on issue and focused. And I think that's been reflected in his rise in the polls. So, yeah, there is that kind of cliche-ish notion, and I'm wondering, too, whether that's just a necessary kind of byproduct of not only winning the White House, but trying to run an effective White House in this 24/7 communication kind of cocoon we're in.
Let's talk about the conventions. The Democrats hold theirs first, and then the Republicans very shortly afterward. And I guess kind of similar to the whole Electoral College question, what are these things for nowadays when the men walk in presumptive?
Yeah. yeah, what they're for now, and we're not back in the I guess the exciting, the fun days of the brokered conventions when you'd get to the convention like in 48 or 52 and you really wouldn't know who the nominee would be. You're right, we know who the nominees are going to be. So traditionally, and that could be the case this year, the conventions have been a time for each presumptive nominee to name his or eventually her vice presidential running mate. Obama, I kind of thought we'd know that sooner than we have, but that, you know, that certainly could come out then if it hasn't come out yet. So a vice presidential nominee or choice is a big one. The parties also officially each pass a party platform where they put down on paper what they stand for, what they think is important, what the priorities are, and that's not read by too many people. It tends to be a document that's fought over a bit by the delegates to make sure it reflects kind of their views or their passions of the party, within the party. And then, you know, the third, and I guess the bottom line, the pragmatic reason here is to really have a big party, get people together, fire up the base, fire up voters, and you really don't generally have a lot of, you know, substance coming out of these things. One of the big issues will be who's speaking on which night, and I heard kind of a quirky thing about you know, how the Obama camp had set up the nights of the speakers to coincide with certain historical events, and it's a big party in St. Paul, a big party in Denver. The parties tend to choose these with electoral reasons in mind. As I said before, maybe the Republicans will win Minnesota in part because the convention is in the Excel Center up in St. Paul. Maybe the Democrats will win Colorado because their convention is in Denver. So certainly a lot of politics, and you know, lobbyists are there, big money interests are there. So it's as a teacher of this, I'm kind of conflicted. There are some important things going on there, but I guess I don't want to overstate to students the importance of what happens there vis-a-vis what happens before or after that.
Okay, so the question remains, and you had mentioned this in passing just a moment ago, the Michigan and the Florida delegates to the Democratic National Convention, even though, of course, Barack Obama is the presumptive nominee, there will be some tip of the hat to his one-time rival, Senator Hillary Clinton, but has the question about how much and to what effect these two delegations from these two states will be seated at that convention, and will it matter in the end?
Yeah, they'll get partial seating. They won't get their full seating. They'll get half of the allotment, essentially, of the allotment at the start of this whole process. And you know, I don't get a sense that there's a lot of resentment by Michigan or by Florida. Of course, there are some certain stalwarts from each of those states who have made some pretty strong cases. I don't expect that will cast any kind of a pall or any kind of a huge controversy over this thing. Of course, it is interesting that Hillary Clinton's name will be thrown into the nomination pool, into the hopper, and apparently she wasn't in favor of that, if that's true. But it is at least a way to indicate to the Clinton supporters that we haven't forgotten about you, and you know, certainly we'd like you on our team. We'll hear from Hillary Clinton at the convention, former President Bill Clinton. So I think certainly the Obama team is recognizing that, as we've seen all along, that it must try to be inclusive when it comes to the Clinton delegates and the Clinton supporters, the women and others, who, you know, could stay home, could vote for McCain. These are the former Clinton supporters, but most of them probably, when all is said and done, will come back and vote for Obama, and we've already seen evidence of that as well.
When we come back from this break, there's more than just one election taking place, of course, in 2008. There's going to be a third of the Senate and the entire House of Representatives. I guess the big question that everyone is wondering about after who is going to occupy the White House is, well, will the balance of power swing between these two great parties in the legislature? And to what degree will it? you know, we always look to the midterm elections for those big changes, and presidential elections often just solidify what's already in place, reinforce the status quo. We'll find out whether or not that's likely on the other side of this break. Also, Dr. Waltz had mentioned that the winning of the White House is about winning in all the cases but two states, about winner-take-all strategy for each one of these states. If you get the most in the popular vote, you get all of the electoral votes in that state. We're all accustomed to this. Barack Obama ran a very different strategy when he was trying to get his party's nomination. His campaign prepared to do the winner-take-all thing. We'll be right back. If you're a talk radio junkie like me, you might assume that the programming is free. Commercial advertisers pay for the production costs and staff salaries. Well, that's true for most talk radio shows, but not for Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is listener-supported. We rely upon you to pay for the production, salaries, and airtime costs for this worldwide outreach. Hi, this is Todd Wilkin, asking you to consider making a financial gift to Issues Etc. today. You can donate online, issuesetc.org, or donate by check, Lutheran Public Radio, Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. That's Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. Remember, unlike other talk radio shows, Issues Etc. needs your financial support. We depend upon you for the continuation and expansion of Issues Etc. Thanks for your consideration.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
Hello, I'm Olivia Gans, Director of American Victims of Abortion. In 1981, I was in college and pregnant. Afraid and confused, I looked to the abortion industry for help. What they didn't tell me was that my abortion would take the life of my baby and leave me empty and alone. They didn't tell me about the years of tears and grief that stay with you long after the abortion. What abortionists won't tell you is that abortion hurts women. This has been a perspective on life from National Right to Life. For more information, visit our website at nrlc.org.
On behalf of the staff of Issues Etc., thanks to each and every one of the more than 7,600 who signed the online petition to bring back Issues Etc. Peter Preuss II, Carolyn Maxwell, Greg Downs, Pam Splitt, Pastor Robert Kortowski, Adam Hill, Richard Gregg, Tim Seidenstricker, Pastor David Lindenberg, and Ron Littwiller. Thanks for your support.
Ten more minutes in our conversation with Dr. Jeff Walls this Thursday, August the 21st. All right, folks, what are your questions or comments on the 2008 presidential election? I want to hear from you, 1-877-623-MYIE, or talkback at issuesetc.org. Talkback at issuesetc.org. Dr. Jeff Walls is our guest, Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin, co-author of the book Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. You mentioned a few minutes ago that the Electoral College means a winner-take-all in all but two states. Barack Obama made his way to the nomination by taking what he could get rather than trying to take as much as he could get. He tried to take what he could get. Is his campaign prepared to change strategies in that sense toward this winner-take-all, have to get all the most votes rather than just a plurality or a slightly less than your opponent?
Yeah, I think it's situated to do that. And you're right. The Democrats, unlike the Republicans in their nomination stage, the Democrats tend to relied upon the proportional representation kind of model. So if Hillary got 55% of the vote in a primary, Obama got 45% of the vote, then that vote would be proportional to the number of delegates that each person earned toward the nomination, whereas Republicans tend to use more of these winner-take-all systems. But I think the one thing that will help Obama at this point is because the race was so close with Hillary, The Obama people, the Obama officers were in you know, literally every state, many regions of each state. And so the thing I think Obama might have going for him, which of course McCain is working at as well, is that Obama has in place some of the infrastructure, some of the offices, some of the on-the-ground kind of building blocks to reach back out to voters, whether they be the Democratic voters they were trying to reach before, maybe moderates, perhaps even some conservatives who might, you know, might want to cross over. So, yeah, certainly it's a different ball game, but because of that tough battle in the nomination stage, I think Obama, at least structurally, is in decent shape across the country.
How is the money going? Barack Obama raised money, and as far as I can tell, is still raising money in unbelievable amounts from a lot of different sources and donors. How's it going for both of the candidates?
Yeah, Obama's raised incredible amounts of money, and a lot of that, as you mentioned, unusually online, at least in presidential history. The millions of voters, millions of contributors who have sent in donations or who have pledged donations to Obama, and that's one reason why Obama did decide not to accept the public funding for the general election stage, which is the first time that's happened. McCain has accepted the public money, so he will start to tap into that after the Twin Cities Convention. But McCain, actually, his fundraising has been going better. It's actually, you know, on par or even exceeding Obama, depending upon the time frame you look at. So I don't think money will be a problem for either of the major presidential candidates. You still do see, though, that there's more, which is unusual, there's more money coming in overall at the presidential, at the congressional level for Democrats than for Republicans. Generally, the Republicans have been able to raise more money. This year, though, it seems like the Democrats monetarily and otherwise seem pretty motivated to get out. And that doesn't mean it's going to be easy for Democrats, but certainly the difference in money indicates a higher, perhaps, degree of engagement with the process at this point, at least, by Democrats than Republicans.
You mentioned fundraising on the Internet. How has the Internet changed the whole dynamic of the presidential elections? I mean, I'm hoping, personally, that when these men gather for their several debates face-to-face, we're not going to have questions asked by sock puppets or snowmen anymore like we did in the preliminary part of this. But how has the Internet changed things?
Yes, I do hope we have debates that are much more refined than some of the questions that came in earlier during the nomination. Just one example here. Again, Obama has suggested that when he announces his vice presidential running mate, that's going to go out first to his supporters, to his people, and he's going to send that out online. So that's certainly a new revolution, where before a candidate generally would have a press conference or something like that, the media would cover it, the on-hand media, and in that way would spread the word. And this is also a way for both candidates to reach, you know, some folks who are harder to reach, especially, and this will be an interesting issue in this election. I think that the younger voters, the teenage voters, the 20s voters, even the 30s voters perhaps, who are more hooked into the Internet, who don't rely on these traditional forms of media, and sometimes it's hard to pick up that kind of support or that kind of activity in more traditional polling. So I'll just be, you know, curious to see if all of this Internet and technologically kind of advanced campaigning will, you know, get more of the young people, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, out to vote. Again, we've seen historically the 18 to 24 and the 18 to 29-year-olds tend to vote at relatively low levels. They were a little better in 2004. But if there's some way to engage and activate these younger voters to get them out for either party, I think that would be a good thing. And that's one impact, one positive impact at least, I expect the Internet and all this new technology will have.
Who are they more likely to vote for? I mean, you sit in the college classroom every day. Who do you think they're more likely to vote for?
Well, I think certainly at Concordia, where I teach, they'd be much more likely to vote for McCain. Overall, and I've seen some national data, but I've also seen some Wisconsin data. The expectation is that Obama is doing very well among younger people, although McCain is making inroads, making efforts to activate the younger folks as well. So I think the conventional wisdom probably would in some ways mirror 2004, when I believe the turnout of the younger people, I'm trying to remember the age grouping, but was around 36%, something like that, which is below the overall total, 50, 52, 55%. And the conventional wisdom is, like Kerry did fairly well among young people in 04, Obama might do fairly well among them as well in 08. But I guess we'll have to see.
Let's talk about, as our time closes down, the other races that coincide with the presidential race. What usually happens during a presidential year when it comes to the balance of power in the legislature?
Yeah, usually what you see during a presidential year when you have congressional and House seats, you used to have what were certainly called coattails, and you have that to a point. That's when a very strong candidate at the top of a ticket, like in this case a John McCain or Barack Obama, a very prominent top-of-the-ticket nominee might bring out people to vote for him or her, and then that will help candidates further down the ballot, running for the Senate, running for the House, those kinds of things. This year, right now we have a Democratic House and Senate, of course, and it feels, I'm sure, to a lot of us, like more like a Democratic year for a number of different reasons. And the math just doesn't help the Republicans either when it comes to the U.S. Senate. We elect to six-year terms essentially a third of our senators every 2 years. And if you look at the senators up for re-election this year, you have many more Republicans up for election than Democrats. And when you have more seats exposed, so to speak, then it's more likely that you might lose some of those seats. So the Democratic Senate, I think, probably will continue unless there's some, cataclysmic event. The House is also Democratic, and some of these generic polls coming out suggest that 8 or 9 out of 10 Americans, if it were a Republican or a Democrat on the ballot, would vote for a Democrat. Now, again, those sometimes aren't very helpful because you need to look at the district, and the incumbents are so strong in the House. Generally what happens is you see some...
About 10 seconds here.
...coattail effect, but this year it looks like a strong Democratic year, at least at this point.
Dr. Jeff Walls is Associate Professor of Political Science at Concordia University, Wisconsin. He's co-author of the book Lutheran Pastors and Politics, Issues in the Public Square. Thank you so much for being our guest. Look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you, Todd. Me too.
When we come back from this break, it's Hour 2 of Issues, Etc. What's up in Hour 2? Well, we're going to be talking first with Doug Johnson. Barack Obama has said that National Right to Life and other organizations has been lying about him, about his record on a particular bill that he killed in a committee when he was serving in the legislature in Illinois, a bill that apparently is identical to one that he says he would have voted for if he had been in the Senate when it passed, the Born Alive Infant Protection Act. We'll find out the real story on what's going on. Douglas Johnson of National Right to Life, based in Washington, D.C., will be our guest on the other side of this break. And after our brief conversation with Doug, Dr. David Adams will join us. We'll talk about the order of creation. God, Christ, man, woman. This is what Paul talks about in one of his epistles. He says that this is the order of things, always has been, always will be. We'll find out more in about 10 minutes here on Issues, Etc. Tomorrow on the program, Dr. H. Wayne House on false Christs versus the true Christ, Monday, feminism and abortion with Sarah Foster, Hour 2 after this.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues, Etc. Issues, Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Issues Etc., P.O. Box 1046, San Juan Capistrano, California, 92693. Box 1046, SJC, California, 92693. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
You can't win, Darth. If you strike me down, I shall become more powerful than you can possibly imagine.